everybody, welcome to another episode of Roleplay Chat. I'm Matt, a game master who can't stop talking about role-playing games. In this week's episode of Roleplay Chat, we're going to talk about player-driven world building. World building is something that I've always been really, really passionate about, and I'm joined by Rio from the Tabletop team to talk about it, especially from a player-driven perspective, which I think will be a lot of fun. Before we dive too much into that, I had a quick announcement for everybody listening, something that I wanted to share that I'm pretty excited about. I've decided to start doing something called the Indie Spotlight, or the name still being workshopped, but the idea is that in every episode of Roleplay Chat, there's going to be a small, quick review of about 10 to 15 minutes where I talk about an indie-created project, whether that be a supplement or a new system or maybe like a solo game or something like that. But the idea is to supplement the conversations that we're having here on the show to also be encouraging you to try new games, to check out new things and to kind of see what my experience is playing these new games. So stay tuned. That's going to start probably as of next episode. So in 2 weeks' time, and it's going to be part of the free episode. So even if you're not a Patreon subscriber, you'll be able to listen to that little, you know, indie spotlight or system showcase or something like that. So without further ado, let's dive into today's episode about world building from a player's perspective. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Roleplay Chat. I'm Matt, and I am a game master who can't stop talking about role-playing games. I am so excited today to be talking to you all about player-driven world building. World building is something that I'm extremely passionate about, as most of you probably already know, and it's also something that I believe my guest today is quite passionate about. So please join me in welcoming a lover of fiction and fantasy, a world builder in his own right, and the co-host of Tabletopped, Rio. Rio, welcome to Roleplay Chat.
Hey, thanks for having me. Long time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for being here, Rio. You're really saving me tonight. For the listeners of the show, we had a little bit of a scheduling mishap, and if it weren't for Rio, there wouldn't be an episode this week. So, you know, y'all should go follow Rio on socials, say thank you, and then listen to all his wonderful insights on Tabletop.
You know, I have been described as heroic several times, and I think it just shows more of that quality in myself.
Exactly. Definitely, you know, slap it on to the LinkedIn profile, podcast hero, game master extraordinaire, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I could get so many new jobs.
That's the goal, isn't it? That's the plan.
Yeah, all the jobs, at least 4 or 5.
Uh-huh. I mean, you need that many these days just to keep afloat, it seems like. We're not here to talk about economy. We're here to talk about role-playing games. So, Rio, before we dive too deep into the pool that is world-building, why don't you give a really quick introduction to the listeners about who you are and give us your, you know, geek origin story, if you will, so that we can contextualize the advice and recommendations and stuff you're going to share with us today.
Okay. I'll try to make this quick and sweet, or short and sweet, I think is the actual phrase. My way's better. So I'm Rio. I am the co-host, not the co-host. There's four of us. So I'm a co-host of Tabletop, a podcast that talks all about gaming, world building, adventure having. Tabletoppod.com is our website. You can find me there. And my geek origin, I was a quiet child. My first world that I ever created was with a bunch of Burger King toys from The Lion King back in 93. Nice. With construction, cardboard tubes, construction paper, various G.I. Joes, just built a little map, started having continuous ongoing stories in my bedroom. And then in high school, I had a mythology class that one of our final project was create a mythology, creation myth, pantheon of gods, and a destruction myth. That was Koronor, my Mythology Final project, and that is the world that I've still been building and I'm playing in today with my co-host over at Tabletop and with many other people.
Cool. That's cool. I'm impressed that you're still plugging away at the same world. It's shows dedication. Heroic and dedicated.
It's dedication, it's procrastination, it's perfectionism, and constantly starting over.
I love that. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm really excited then and eager to see if and how players and the people that you've played games with have impacted Koronor. So maybe that's a good place to start. When you do world building, Ryo, to what degree is it like solo fun for you, and how much creative liberty do you allow your players to have when it comes to the world that they're in?
I love world building. It's like one of my favorite pastimes. I'm constantly thinking about my world and like the little elements of it. I was a huge biology nerd in college and high school, so like one of my favorite things is trying to figure out how the monster food webs would actually work in any given setting. Figuring out if there's too many monsters, if they're too big, kind of what like the environmental hazards would be. I'm the only one who enjoys that, so that doesn't get a lot of play time. But yes, you can find me probably with notebooks just writing. I just recently started a project where I'm writing a character's father's backstory, just because I was like, I want to build this world and I need to know this guy's story a little bit more in it. So I'm 2,500 words into a project that has no point, just to know what one character's part of the world building part of everything was. So yeah, that's me. Totally on board to build and pitch anything. Now, how much control or leeway do I give my players to world build? This is actually a funny story. I like to think that everyone can just build their characters the way that they want them to, and I'm totally going to let anything fly, is what I would like to think about myself. When we first started our current D&D group, we were playing a game called The Gilded Canaries, and it was a guild. So we were like, okay, every time the guild has a job, we would switch DMs and someone else could run that job. And it was the world that I built, Koronor, and I let friends of mine, Nick was one of them, our friend Sean, who's been on the podcast a couple of times, we would rotate through these folks as DMs, and I absolutely hated everything that they did to my world so much that I stopped letting them take turns. So in practice, I'm not as good as giving leeway as I am in theory.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. And I think that's brave of you. I wouldn't have given my world up to anybody.
Yeah, don't. I've learned my lesson. Yeah.
What kind of changes? Can you remember what kind of stuff they did that made you be like, no, stop, you're ruining it?
One of them, and I won't name names, was just literally taking things from the Forgotten Realms and putting it into my world. I was like, I don't want you. He put a city called Faerun into, like, I was like, that is literally the name of the world. Like, that's, but it can't exist. And then another guy did an entire campaign where we had to fight the Predator from that movie Predator.
Yeah.
it was like, okay, this is not my vision. It's not where I saw a bunch of franchise and published IPs coming into my world. So yeah, had to put an end to that, do a little soft reboot.
You mean, so you didn't put, like, you didn't bring the alien too, so that the alien could then kill off the Predator in your like bio web, and then
what absolutely sucks is because I already had I had the Marpox, which was an extra world parasite that transmuted the blood and turned them into, like, I already had it, but if you put predators in there, it ruined what I had done.
Yeah.
You have to be subtle when you steal from published works. You can't just do it outright.
Yeah. That's funny. Cool. Well, you know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying me personally, when I do my world building, there's a lot of stuff that I'm doing that's like this solo fun. It's like I'm just doing it because I want to do it, and my friends don't need to know the weather and patterns of the Caribbean portion of the world that we're playing in because we're never going there or whatever, you know. Yeah.
Send me a weather map. I would love to see how weather works.
There's a really, really cool website. I might have mentioned it on the show before. Now I can't remember what it's called. Give me 1 second. It's like in my favorites.
While you're looking, I drew out a world map years ago and showed it to my friend Rebecca, who is a weather nerd herself. And she literally looked at where the oceans were placed, where bodies of water were, and we made the temperate, the tropical. We predicted who would have like a wet, dry season versus the like four seasons that we have in the more temperate regions. We spent like 2 or 3 hours just literally going, okay, there's no bodies of land here, so this whole strip of ocean is just going to be typhoon and hurricane heavy.
That's exactly where I was going with this. So the website's called Asgard's Fantasy Map Generator, AZGAAR, and it's so cool. You can basically import an image of a map of your world, and then there's like layers to the map that you can use where you can plug in details about like the circumference of your world. You have moons and stuff like this. It defaults to like Earth, but you can do that. And then you can add Köppen climate classification data, like superimposed that the map generator will generate accurately based on like where mountain ranges are and where bodies of water are. It's really cool. It's really, really cool.
Let me throw a question at you. When you're world building, do you actually try to figure out how many miles are between your landmarks so you know exactly like how much land you actually have to play with when building stuff up, like forest and grasslands and herding animals?
Yeah, I mean, herding animals I don't think about, but I definitely have
predators like, eat. Scale. What do people hunt for food? You got to have herds.
Yeah, I mean, they're herds, but I don't get to that level of detail. I focus more on the climate zones are something that I really care about because it helps me understand what resources would and wouldn't be available in the location, and then that helps me build the economy of that location.
You send me your map, I'll send you migrating patterns for your animals.
Okay, perfect. We'll do a trade. I think a trap that we can easily fall into, Rio, when we're doing this kind of stuff is not allowing our players to have enough ownership of the space that they're playing in. I think that's why I wanted to talk about this with you today, because, you know, I often find myself in a situation when I'm running a game, and like every game I run these days, I end up like plugging it into this world. Like I just, you know, it's part of Makoa. It's part of the world that I'm building because it helps me build it playing in it.
Yeah. Once you have your core world, everything falls to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you find yourself in situations where you'll have a player that'll come up to you and be super excited about a character concept that they have. Maybe they have, you know, they have that infamous 10-page character backstory. Or even if it's just, you know, a couple of dotted lines about like, I wanted to be a pupil at a mage college, and I want to also have a rival who's part of this military that, like, I don't know, that I am no longer a part of, and now they're out to get me. I'm like an outlaw or something. If people come to me with those kinds of ideas, I want to be able to try to massage them into the world in a way that's satisfying for both of us. Has that ever been something that you've had to deal with?
Yeah. So I have a player who really wanted to be from the Shadowfell. Wanted to be a dark elf from the Shadowfell. And obviously, as I said, I'm not going to incorporate a, like, Forgotten Realms published thing into my world. I want to keep it separate just in case I ever decide to publish anything. I can't be like, oh, this is a total ripoff of that other novel. So what I did is I ripped off that other novel in a way that was not calling it the Shadowfell, but he and I created a world called Wrath, just R-A-T-H, because it's cool to spell things wrong. And it was a world not like the Shadowfell. This was a world that is inhabited the mantle of a globe. So you didn't have any surface area. Everything was interior to the planet, which gave it that sort of dark, claustrophobic, sort of squeezed in. You never know where danger is going to be. So obviously, like, his dark elf could have just been an elf from a world that was just always in darkness. He still had his name be Shadowfell, just as a surname. And I was like, well, that's probably fine. But since Koronor has, like, sort of a root world with many different realms attached to it, it was pretty simple to just create a new world of shadow and darkness. Like, okay, this exists. It's one of the elemental planes of stone. And you have what you need, and I haven't upset my integrity. I get integrity is what I have.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool. And I mean, I think that's generous of you to build a whole world. I suppose it's both generous and a good solution, though, because you don't like, it's a new thing. It's a new thing that doesn't have to come in and play with the balance of what already exists.
Right. It was a new thing. It existed. It gave his character his backstory. Yeah. And then later, we actually had an adventure in there because I had already made it. So it became, it grew into the story, which is a great opportunity that we wouldn't have had if I just said, no, you can just be an elf from the woods like everyone else. You miss opportunities when you don't let your players help you create, because it is collaborative storytelling. And a lot of times, one side or the other does forget that. So it's good to just be open to ideas. And then, you know, you never know what's going to be the next good idea or a hook for a whole spinoff if you're shutting stuff down because it doesn't fit your exact vision from the get-go.
That's really good advice, because I think too, you're going to get that player's buy-in. Like, if you're telling them, hey, I'm building you a whole other plane of existence, they're like, thank you. Or they should be, hopefully. They're very thankful. and they have, like, this investment. Like, this is mine. This is my part of the world that I get to make reference to. I kind of have this creative freedom to talk about, which I think is important. Because if you shackle your players, they're going to be too scared to, like, come up with stuff. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
We both start talking at the exact same time. This is great timing for us. It's like, you don't want to shut down improv in those moments. The more like you gridlock your players into this is what my world is, the less they're going to be willing to take risk and try things.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I like to do is kind of by the same token, when a player comes to me and has an idea, especially lately. So to give you a little bit of context, Rio, I'm playing right now with some close friends of mine, but they're not very big into tabletop role playing games. Like they started playing because I was like, hey, you're close, I'm close, let's play games every other Sunday. Come on over, let's play. And I'm slowly converting them. But when they came to the table, they just had pre-gen characters, so I didn't have this backstory to integrate. But now that we're playing and we're going on these adventures, every now and then they'll come up with an idea and they'll say like, oh, it'd be really cool if I knew this blacksmith. Like, this blacksmith was part of my family. Like, maybe he's my cousin and I want this blacksmith and my family to be responsible for like a blacksmithing guild. Like, could that happen? And I don't want to say no. I'm not going to say yes 100%. It's going to be like kind of this conversation of, okay, this is a cool idea, but I can't have you know, be buddy buddies with the leaders of the biggest blacksmithing guild in the country that you're in. Like that exactly. I can't do. So, you know, finding this balance, but it does throw things off for me, especially when that stuff might already exist. I have a hard time like letting go of control of something. So let's use this as an example.
Yeah.
I already had a blacksmithing guild that existed, and they had stuff happening in the background that my players don't know about. Things where, you know, they're secretly involved with a cult, and that cult is part of the big bad that they're fighting up against. So I had this crossroads where I'm like, do I keep that and let my player be affiliated with this guild without knowing that that's going on, which could be kind of cool. But will that upset her? You know, will I be pulling the rug underneath from her? So I actually haven't decided yet what I'm going to do. What do you think I should do?
There's a lot of intricate, like, connecting parts to that. Because, yeah, like, obviously, the player wants to buy in and become more part of the world. That's great. But to have just stumbled across a plot hook, because now you're like, oh, you can't just say no, because then they're going to feel stifled. But you also can't say yes, because you've got an adventure brewing. So if you do say yes, and then the cult shows up, going, you gave this to me just so you could take it away. So you're in danger, bud. I would say advice show podcast host time. You gotta say yes to your player. Like, you can give them maybe they don't know the guild leaders, but maybe like their uncle is friends with like one of the second generation founding members. So like you have an in with the guild, but you're not like in the guild. And then I don't know what else you've got going on in your world, but like maybe the cult is in a different guild and they're trying to get into the blacksmithing guild. And then now your players have some agency to stop it from actually getting into their thing without it already being there.
Yeah. Yeah. Give them enough warning before something happens. Let them.
Right. Yeah. Let them see it coming instead of finding out it's already there.
Yeah, I could maybe backtrack a little bit and make that happen. Because I think that's part of the beauty of all this, right? It's like, we're the only ones that know, really.
that's what makes it so hard. It's like, oh, if I could just tell you what I had going on, we could work out a really great story crossover element, but you can't know. It's a lonely world doing what we do, and we're not alkylated enough for it.
I couldn't agree more. I think we deserve applause every time that we finish a game. Like, I'm going to have to get that instituted at my table for sure.
Yeah, I have a YouTube video of just 5 minutes of standing ovations. And after everyone signs off, I just turn it on and let it play and just bat.
Perfect. Yeah. And then you don't let anybody leave, right? Like, they have to sit and listen to the standing ovation before they can go home.
Oh, I don't make them listen to the applause. Just for me.
Oh, no, okay.
They had to hear people applaud me, and they, because they should be doing that. So it should also be a guilt thing. I've learned nothing from my mother on how to use the weapon of guilt. They will have to sit around and wait until the applause are done.
That's it.
Yeah. You've helped me. I can't thank you enough.
Perfect. So there's that. Yeah. What else can we say? I think, what about when you're building this stuff? Like, when you're building this stuff independently, do you intentionally leave things or regions of the world kind of like empty, so that when players come up with this kind of stuff, you can fill the holes? Or like, I don't know. Like I said, that's been one strategy I've tried to employ.
Yeah,
in certain contexts,
I don't leave holes for my players to fill, because then I feel like they're discovering empty pages, and I don't want them. I want them to feel like everything they find has been like thought through. So I kind of just build what they use. But I think what is a really good system, and you can't do it the first time you play with a group, but if you have your own world, you have a party and you play them through an adventure or campaign, what you really get, the good stuff, the harvest, is when they make their second characters and they've been playing in the world and they've seen it and they've thought of, and now they have stuff to add from experience.
Oh, cool.
And that's when you can start building in really fun stuff, because then you're doing a time jump from your last campaign. So like, oh, I want this family and this family. Okay, well, the 50 years, these families could have gotten in power and moved along, and it's not the world that I had. It's a time jump, and now you can collaborate more after your players have been in the world for a little while, I think. It's really hard and almost impossible, I would say, to be like, I've made this world, what do you want to contribute to it? Because they don't know what you've done. They might have crazy, wild, straight out there ideas. Because if you've built a Western sort of American frontier game, and they come in, you're like, oh, what do you guys want to have? And you're like, I want to be Dracula. It's like, oh, well, that we're going to be in the desert, and now you have to tell them no, and like start. But if you're like, just throw them your game world, and then play, even if it's like a short, just maybe like 5-6 session adventure, but now that they've in it, they've seen it, and then I think it's easier to ask for them to build and add to it, because now they're veterans of the world. They kind of know what it's like. They know what you've made and what you're looking for, and they can offer more things that are going to be productive. So give players time to exist in the world that you've created, and then open it up to players' like wants and suggestions.
Yeah, that's actually super good advice, Rio. I hadn't considered that, but you're right. Most of the juiciest things that my players have come up with have always been after experiencing parts of the world already. Even like, I think some of the coolest ideas actually come in like these weird one shots that will happen sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, a couple players can't make it, but three of them still could still come and play. So we decide to just have a random one shot where, like, you know what, you're all going to be characters from this guild or this other faction that you're part of the pirates now. Like, just let's have a pirate game in the world and tell me who you are. Like, just, and then they'll come up with all these crazy ideas because, one, they don't have to live with it for the rest of the game. They just play with that character once. But then after you're done, you've got these like really intense characters. Usually I've got these really intense characters. This one time, one of my players decided that I'm going to take this example of the pirate game, which actually happened. One of my players is like, yeah, I want to be this, you know, this wild pirate who is like part octopus, like almost inspired from like the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What's his name there?
Barbados?
Davy Jones.
Davy Jones was that pirate.
Yeah. They're like, I want to be like
animated Disney, not live action Disney.
That's it. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. It's a one shot, whatever. We don't have to understand how this happened. You can be a pirate who's also an octopus. And then afterward, I connected with that player and I'm like, okay, let's figure out how this happened. Like, were you cursed? Who cursed you? What demon cursed you? And we came up with this whole new branch of the like demonic pantheon of the world that I hadn't considered before, which was really, really fun and wouldn't have happened without this like random one shot.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really fun.
They plant those little side games so that they can plant seeds in a safe environment. I think you're right. With a one-shot, people are willing to really like let themselves loose more. And then it's a one-shot, so you're not married to anything, but there's a lot you can harvest after it's done.
Yeah, yeah. And at the end of the day, you can always be like, nah, that wasn't canon. Like, that, we had fun, but that didn't actually happen. You know, if really they go too off the rails. I've never had to do that, but it's always nice to know that you have that option, I think.
Yeah. The it's non-canonical is I had to use that button a lot. Because Nick, you've met Nick. I think he's on your show. He ran a one shot for our game. he plays a character called Bill Stabums. And from playing with him, we've created this whole family that he belongs to, the Stabums crime family. And he wanted to do a one shot called The Tomb of Bill Annihilation, which all of his offspring had got pulled, because Bill had used his fortunes to build a death trap to test which one of his like great grand offsprings would be like worthy of his fortune. But because it was like Bill and all of these kids that he had and like the other world lives, I was constantly in every chat just like non-canonical, this is all non-canonical. That meme from Bob Burgers with Tina is teaching Bob about the Equestronauts. There's a great meme where she's just panicking. She goes, non-canonical. So I have that meme. It's pinned. I use it anytime anyone says the world Bill Annihilation. I'm like, nope, non-canonical.
Yeah. Ugh, Nick is just coming in here and he's ruining your world, eh? That Nick.
It's he can't help it. He's like a puppy with an energy drink in his system. He just loves everything. He's full of bites and slobber.
I mean, Bill Stabums sounds like a pretty fun character to play, I'm not going to lie. So you need a couple Bill Stabums in your world for sure.
Well, he has a cousin, Wade, so if you ever want to come over, you can play Wade Stabums.
Okay, yeah, I accept that invitation immediately. Let's go. Let's make it happen.
All right.
Sweet. So, Rio, I'm looking at the clock, and I want to make sure we save some time for our Patreon exclusive red carpet event. But before we get to that, why don't I pass you the microphone one last time to see if you have any final thoughts about allowing players to contribute to your world building. And, you know, if you could give one piece of advice to somebody who might be unsure of how to do it, what would be your like number one takeaway for someone trying to help get their players involved and how to maybe lose some of that control a little bit?
Okay. Well, I would say my number one piece of advice, if you want to let players help build your world, is really, really think about it and choose who you're going to let actually contribute. Because once you open that door, you can't just take it away. But if you open that door, you get a lot of great stuff for free. So it's worth doing, but it's worth doing right. Yeah, I hope
that's really solid advice. Criteria. Yeah, I mean, if I could have one follow-up question for you, and of course this will differ from person to person, but for you personally, how do you know that somebody can be trusted with the keys to your world?
Oh, God, I don't actually... This is tough for me.
Yeah.
Because I play with 7 people. I love them all dearly. They're in my circle. They're real life friends. None of them. I would let none of them touch my world with any sense of permanency.
Yeah.
They are allowed to give me ideas in a test server, and then I might bring it over on my own to the real world. But yeah, test server, one shots. I would let anyone do anything they wanted to my world in a non-canonical one shot to see how it goes. And so that's how I would handle that.
Yeah, I think that's really solid advice. I think especially if it's something that you've been working on for such a long time, right?
Yeah.
You've had this world for a long time. On the other side of that spectrum, I might say to people listening, kind of, I mean, I think it's echoing a little bit what Rio is saying, but you have nothing to lose, really.
Right.
Because ultimately, you can always change the locks on the car that change the locks on your world and clean it out if you have to. But there's a lot to gain, like you're saying, Rio. I think people, your friends or the people playing with you often have a lot of really great ideas. As far as their character is concerned, usually that's where their source of inspiration will come from.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's up to you to decide whether or not you want to galvanize it into the world. But I think, yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity to be had there. All right, so world building is now, you know, been discussed. Now let's segue on over into the Roleplay Chat VIP Patreon room. And over here, so welcome.
Those velvet ropes back that
way. That's
it.
Yeah, just pass the two bodyguards. We'll come on that way. We have free giant pretzels in there too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, with the mustard, you know.
Yeah, we should have done the whole thing in this room. This is great cushion couch. The lighting's way better. is this a bottle of champagne?
The pretzels and champagne. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, is this Prosecco. A bubble machine? Oh, look at the bubble machine. This room's nice.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time. Yeah. People need to make sure that they, you know, they go find the Patreon to Roleplay Chat and subscribe there to get access to this beautiful room.
I guess that's a good example of player-induced world building.
All right, we're back. The super VIP room was actually just the back alley. There's like a dumpster and stuff. I don't know. I don't think it's worth spending too much time back there. What do you think, Rio?
I think it was an inside joke that we just weren't meant to get.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But so we're here at the tail end of the show. And before we wrap up, I want to thank you, Rio, for being here to chit chat with me.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a blast. So I don't know if you had any last words on player driven stuff, world building, any of that. I'll pass you the microphone, and then before you do say goodbye, please remind everybody where they can listen to Tabletop, where they can find you on socials, and any other stuff you've got going on.
Oh, yeah, I would say if you're a player, inject as much as you can. Eventually your DM will let you build stuff. That's just yours. And if you're a DM or a game master, don't be so precious that you don't make room for your players' ideas, because they're little seedlings and you want them to take root and sprout and enjoy the world and bring beauty to it. So give them that space. So other than that, I've been Riho, co-host of Tabletop, a great podcast. If you want to hear more about people just playing games that they like and then talking about it on the radio, you can find us at tabletoppedpod.com. All of our shows are there. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple Music. I think we're on all of the all the podcast hosting services. Nick's been great getting us platformed out. If you want to hear me occasionally post something once every 2 or 3 months, you can find me at Koronor, that's the @ KORRENOR, on Blue Sky, our Instagram. Those are the ones that I'm most active on. I do little doodles and I'll put them up sometimes. Sometimes I'll just have a great thought. Your most best chance to hear my thoughts are on Tabletop every Monday. So I'll also tell you when we post, because that'll be helpful. Yeah, every Monday, new episodes go live. So we'll see you there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to encourage everybody listening to go check out Tabletop. What Rio, Nick, and the gang over there are doing is not too dissimilar to this. So if you've enjoyed Roleplay Chat up until this point, you'll definitely enjoy Tabletop as well. So go check it out. Give it a listen. And I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was on Tabletop talking to Nick about cliffhangers, if I'm not mistaken. So go check that episode out. It was a really fun chat. And then subscribe to it so you can listen to the rest. So yeah, that's been Roleplay Chat. Thank you, Rio, once again for being here. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Great meeting you. Great talking.
Yeah, likewise. We'll have to do that trade with our maps, and then I'll hold you to playing Bill Stabham's cousin, so people the podcast can look.
Let me know when you're ready. We'll have it set up.
All right. Cheers, Rio, and bye, everybody. Let's call it a chat.
All right. Peace easy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the end of the show, and thank you for making it all the way to the end. While we're here, I have a couple of thank yous to give out to folks. The first thank yous go to the Patreon subscribers of Roleplay Chat. That's Domil's Wondrous Works,
and Jason over at Shadowmane. Thank you to both of you. I'd also like to thank Alex and Chase over at Pocket Bard. Thanks, guys, for letting me use your beautiful music in the outro and intro of the show. And last but not least, I'd like to thank you, the listeners of Roleplay Chat. If you wanted to support the show, there's two ways that you can do that. You can do that without spending money by spreading the good word of Roleplay Chat and following me on socials. That's at @role_play_chat. Or if you wanted to support the show with your dollars, I would highly recommend checking out the affiliate links down below. There you can buy products, TTRPG products and things of that nature, without any extra additional expense to you. A small kickback, if you use those links, come back to me. Or you can support the show by subscribing to the Patreon. There are two tiers there, one of which supports me directly and has your name shouted out, kind of like Jason and DeMille. Or if you wanted to support the show at a higher tier, you get access to longer episodes of the show, usually 15 to 30 minutes more of conversations between me and the guest. So if you want those longer extended episodes, I recommend checking that out. So anyway, thanks again for making it all the way to the end, and hope you have a wonderful day.